Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 21, Jesus has said goodbye to the demoniac, clothed in his right mind, coming back across the sea now, when Jesus was passed over again by ship into the other side, back to Capernaum. Much people gathered unto him. He was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I say unto thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And now in this procession, in this crowd, Jesus is interrupted by a woman with a flow of blood. We're going to look at her next week, if the Lord tarries. She touches the hem of his garment because she says, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be made whole. And she feels the blood flow stop and goes to sneak away in the crowd. And Jesus stops and looks around and says, Who touched me? And his disciples said, Who touched you? There's thousands of people thronging you. But it says, she realized what was done in her. And with fear and trembling, she came back and fell down in front of Jesus and told him the whole story. I'm sure Jairus is thinking, I can't believe this. Can't you come back and minister to her? I was in line first. We do this, at the layaway, at supermarket. Now, and Jesus finally says to her, Your daughter, same word that Jairus uses, daughter. Your faith has made you whole. Go in peace. Verse 35 picks up the story where it says, While he yet spake, while Jesus was talking to this woman, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Thy daughter is dead. They're not very tactful, these people, whoever they are that work for them. Why trouble thou the master any further? And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, He said to the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. He came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and he seeth the tumult, them that wept and wailed greatly. When he was come in, he said unto them, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but she's sleeping. And they laughed him to scorn. And when he had put them all out, I like that, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, them that were with him, Peter, James, and John, and entered in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, Talitha cumi, Aramaic, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. They were astonished with great astonishment. That's a good way to say it. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. Jesus, coming back now to Capernaum, having taught the parable of the sower, and evidently as he did that a day and a half or so earlier, this little girl had already been sick, left the area, went through the storm, rebuked the wind and the sea, came to the area of the Gadarenes, delivered the man there, and now has come back. And as he comes back, this man, Jairus, comes running to him. Jairus means Jehovah enlightens, and that is a great name, not only for the man, but for this experience. He is the ruler of the synagogue, one of the rulers of the synagogue, which means basically he had custodial responsibility in the synagogue. He would clean it. He would make sure everything was kept in order. He would make sure it was locked. If there were any additions or repairs, he would make sure that that takes place. And he was also the PR man. He would be the one who would make sure that someone would read the scripture, someone would pray. He would give permission to a visiting rabbi to be the one who would speak. And to be in that position, he had a certain level of prestige. certainly a level of respect and wealth in the community, position that was to be admired. He had something else that was being weighed in the balances against all of that, against all of the things that so many people think they want in life. Now, on the other side of the scales, it's a 12-year-old girl put there. Luke tells us his only daughter, only child, 12-year-old girl, at the point of death. 12 years had brought joy to his house. 12-year-old girl is an interesting creature. I have one that'll be 12 this June. I've had others. The Talmud said that when a girl turned 12, she was a woman. For a boy to be considered a man, he had to be 13 years and one day. I'm not sure what difference the one day makes. I've had several 13 years old and it didn't make any difference in their lives. That was the tradition, 13 years and one day for a boy. 12-year-old girl, interesting creature, particularly today. 12 years old. The Bible speaks of the age of reason. My observation is this has been the age of unreasonable, not the age of reason. Hairspray. Okay. Five brushes. Combs. Makeup. No. Lip gloss. Okay. Fingernail polish. You see a kid, one minute they want to play with a doll, the next minute they want to look like a new movie star. You know, they're just an interesting age in there, 12 years old. Now, I think this was a different time. This is a 12-year-old who hasn't been exposed to MTV, to the morals of our day. They've raised this 12-year-old without ever sitting down and putting the television on at night. They've looked into her face. She's been their entertainment. She's been their joy. You can imagine a life like that, what has been happening between their heart and between hers. And now this 12-year-old is taken sick. Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, must have been there when the man with the withered hand was healed in that synagogue in Capernaum. Jairus must know the centurion who built that synagogue, who had said to Jesus, "Just speak the word and my servant will be healed." Jairus must be aware that they tore up someone's roof in that town and lowered down a man on a pallet who was healed. And who knows what other things he had been exposed to. And yet, as his daughter had worsened, he wasn't desperate enough. Stubborn, like Saul of Tarsus, no doubt kicking against the goads, but not ready. His wife may have been saying to him, "You are so big-headed. Go find the rabbi, please." But now he's come face to face with the impossible. He has come face to face with desperation. Every human being in this room will come face to face with a day like this. Every human being in this room will come face to face with death, whether it's their own or a loved one's. This is an impossible situation. Now, he comes to Jesus at this point out of desperation. All of a sudden, his daughter weighs more in the scales than his reputation, his respect, his self-worth, his wealth. He is willing to put all of that on the line because the religious leaders already hate Jesus. They're already looking for a reason to kill him. And for Jairus to come in the daylight, Nicodemus came at night. He comes in broad day and falls down in front of Jesus. At that point, he is willing to relinquish everything else for the sake of this little girl that he loves. Things have come into perspective, life and death. I don't believe that if he knew his daughter was dead, he would have bothered Christ. He's coming asking for a healing. That's what he's seen. That's what he's heard of. Jesus hasn't raised anybody from the dead yet. He falls down and worships him, Matthew says. And says, "Come." Says he pleads desperately. "My daughter is at the very door of death." And when we come to this point, IQ doesn't matter, social status doesn't matter, our position in life doesn't matter. It's interesting, Jesus doesn't look at him and say, "Oh, so now you're here. You were with all those mean guys that wanted to kill me before. Now you're here, huh? You got nerve." No, there's none of that. Just says in verse 24 that Jesus went with him. That's a remarkable thing. Jesus went with him. Now, this is a situation when you're saying it can't get any worse. You know not to say that, don't you? Because now they're interrupted by this woman. Jesus is stopping. They're trying to make their way through the crowd anyway. We don't know how long does it take them to get to Jairus' house. An hour and a half an hour? We don't know. They're trying to get through the crowd of the throngs. And now Jesus stops and says, "Who touched me?" Jairus has got his... "Who touched you?" Probably said to the disciples, "What does he mean, who touched him? 1,000 people touched him." They said to Jesus, "What do you mean, who touched you?" And then the woman falling down, the whole scene. And Jesus calling her daughter. That's the word Jairus had used. "Daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace." I wonder what's happening in the heart of Jairus. One of those divine interruptions that stretches you when you do not want to be interrupted. You're saying, "Okay, Lord, you won. I cried uncle. I fell down in front of you. I surrendered. I gave up. Now I get interrupted? This is what I get?" Well, just as he's saying to the woman, "Daughter, your faith has made thee whole," it says, right as he's speaking, the people come from the house of Jairus, just when you think things can't get any worse for the second time, and say, "Your daughter is dead. Don't trouble the master any further." Now, there's an important inference here, and it's partly what this whole scene is about. What they're saying is, now King James says master, the idea is teacher. "Don't trouble the teacher. Your daughter's dead." This situation now is beyond his abilities. He's a teacher. We have a dead body now. No sense in troubling him any further. This is beyond the teacher's abilities. Well, that's exactly what Jesus wanted to walk into. That's exactly what Jesus wanted to show them and us. Don't trouble the teacher. Jesus spins around to Jairus because he immediately knows that his heart is falling through the floor and says, "Fear not, only believe." And the tenses are interesting. He says, "Stop fearing, keep believing." That's good plaque stuff. It needs to be over your mantle. It needs to be on your refrigerator. "Stop fearing, keep believing." And that's where I want it, on a plaque. Not on my life. I want the correspondence course. I don't want to go here. This is good stuff, Lord. I understand. I even know the tenses, Lord. "Stop fearing, keep believing." Okay, let's move on to the next story. Jesus spins to him and stops him. "Jairus, don't be afraid. Believe." Jairus is thinking, "She died without me. My only daughter. I wasn't there." People are haunted by that sometimes their whole life. "I wasn't there when she breathed her last." Oh, it's easy to read. I can't imagine what's happening in the life of this man. Some of you know the feeling. They proceed onward to the house, it tells us. And as they come, there's a tumult. The professional mourners are there. In that day, There was no obituary in the newspaper. It wasn't on the radio or the television. In that day, you hired professional mourners, and particularly if you're a person that seems to be of some means, like Jairus. The Talmud said there would be two flute players for every wailer. I guess they wanted something sweet to balance out that noise. If you've ever heard it in the Middle East, you know what it sounds like. And there's a big tumult. They get there. There's a big ruckus. And that took place so the whole community would know. They would hear that. They would come. Who's died? It was the way everybody would know. Oh, Jairus' daughter, you know. And then people would gather who were close to the family. So this whole thing is going on. Jesus walks in the middle of it and said, what is the big deal? She's not dead. She's sleeping. And it says they laughed him to scorn. They kept laughing him to scorn. They said, you're the prophet? We're professionals. We were with two stiffs earlier today. We've seen 1,000 stiffs. This is what we do for a living. The girl is dead. She's as dead as a doornail. What do you mean she's sleeping? And they're laughing. You know, their professionalism falls through the floor because they go right from weeping and crying immediately to laughing. Because they're only professional mourners. There's no heart here. They're not real mourners. They're just pros. Jesus put them all out. It just says that. I want to know how he did it. I want to know. Laughing him to scorn. Who do they think they are? Well, to Jesus, she was sleeping. The New Testament speaks of believers that have died as sleeping because they're getting up again. Jesus knew she was getting up again. She's going to get up twice, as a matter of fact. Put them all out. And then he takes Peter, James, and John and the mother and father with him into where the girl is laying on the bed dead. Now, it's always interesting to me. I think James was included in these things, and James was the first martyr. You know, I almost understand Peter and John. They were such an influence in the church, and their ministry went on for decades. But James is cut off. And, you know, I think maybe he needed more than all of them if he was going to be the first martyr to see Jairus' daughter raised from the dead. Maybe more than all of them, he needed to be at the transfiguration to see the glory that there was. Maybe more than all of them, he needed to hear Jesus in Gethsemane say, not my will, but thine be done, because he would live those things out first. Oh, so would Peter and John, and I guess to God 50 years is not much of a difference in time. They'd all have to live those things out, and so will we, knowing that he's going to raise the dead, knowing that his glory will be on the other side, knowing that the way that happens will be his will and not ours. They go in. The girl is dead. How dead is she? You know, we live in a society where we watch 911 on TV and they could run in with the paddles with the machine, you know, quick, you know, put them on clear, ba-boom, you know, ba-boom, try to get her back, you know. It's interesting, Jesus only raises three people from the dead in his ministry that we know of. This girl is raised from the dead. She's the only daughter of this family. In name, there's a widow whose son has died, which would have been her only means of support. We're not sure. It seems that it was a boy. But he was dead all day, or maybe even the day before. We're not sure. This girl's been dead an hour. She's pretty fresh. In name, the boy's maybe a day. They got him in the grave as fast as they could. And then Lazarus. 4 days. He's cooking. Roll away the stone. Lord, he stinketh. Now that's the whole point. Jesus wanted to raise one that was stinking. Because after 4 days, you can read on your own, blood is separated in the corpuscles and serum. The whole body's turned yellow. The whole back is blue from all the blood seeping to the bottom. The eyes have collapsed. The internal organs have turned to jelly and collapsed. The body's gone through rigor mortis. It's swollen up. You have to realize what had to happen for Jesus to say, Lazarus, come forth, and for him to come hopping out of there. It was a miracle of creation that had to take place. And that had greater testimony, too, to the fact of the triumphal entry and Jesus coming into Jerusalem. One's dead an hour, one's dead a day, one's dead 4 days. Which one's the most dead? If you could be one of these dead people, which one would you want to be? It doesn't make any difference when you're dead. An hour, a day, 4 days, you're dead. You know, he didn't raise many because he knew above everyone what he was calling them from. This little girl was in the bosom of Abraham. At thy right hand are pleasures evermore, David was saying. It was unspeakable what she was seeing and beholding. And the Lord called her from there back to her body. At Nain, he called that boy back. Where did he speak? Where was his voice heard? Here he says, Talitha Kumai. Peter's paying very close attention, because in Acts chapter 9, Peter will put everybody out of the house with Dorcas and say, Tabitha Kumai there. Gazelle, arise. Here it's Talitha, which is a diminutive form, which was probably in Aramaic, little lamb. It's a little girl, but diminutive would be little lamb, arise. Here's Yahweh God, Jehovah, who laid out the universe with the span of his hand. It says, first he takes this little dead, limp hand, and he takes a hold of it. And he stoops over and he says, little lamb. Now, today we would say, honey, sweetheart, darling. He stoops over. Parents are standing there. He says, sweetheart, come back. Come on, get up. Where was she? Where did she hear him from? Did she go, oh, no. Where, you know, you know. Lazarus had been enjoying what he was enjoying for 4 days, if there's time there. The Lord says, Lazarus, oh Lord, I stink. I don't want to go back there. You see, he knew Jesus, where he was calling them from. That's why he didn't raise many. He didn't raise this girl for her. He raised this girl for her parents and for us here this morning. He raised the widow's son, not for the widow's son's sake, but for the mom and for us. And he raised Lazarus, not for Mary and Martha. He raised Lazarus, not for Lazarus. He raised Lazarus for us all, because he said, I am the resurrection and the life. Not just the teacher. Don't bother the teacher. She's dead. Oh, he's not just the teacher. I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And he that liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Jairus means Jehovah enlightens. He's much more than a teacher. Calls them back. It's only the state of decay that differs. The girl's fresh. The widow's son is day old. Lazarus is gone. Much more decayed. The level of deadness physically is the same. There's a lot of people that are alive but dead, Jesus says. They're pretty fresh, but they're dead. He'd say, let the dead bury their own dead. He would say, the dead have their gods. Spiritually dead, which is the eternal death, though physically alive. Waiting for that physical death, which then seals the fate, if someone has not been spiritually born again before they die physically. Remarkable, as he stoops over, takes her by the hand, lifts her up. Now, I know there's people here, hearts are broken, you've lost loved ones the last year, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. You know, isn't it interesting? If you were in Jairus' place, and your daughter was dying today, and you knew the story. You knew on the way home from church today, your friends were going to come up and say, "Don't bother rushing home, she's dead." And you knew an hour after that, Jesus was going to raise her from the dead. You'd say, "Wait, do you see this? This is a great story. I love this. Let's go home. Can't wait." You know, I think if I was in the widow's place and knew the story, and my son was dead for an entire day, my sons, I love my sons, I think there's time, some time to sit and think while you're waiting for the 24 hours. Oh, you're sure you're going to do this 24 hours? Okay. That'd be a quiet 24 hours. Lazarus, 4 days. What if your child, your husband, your son was taken, your parent, 4 days? And you knew the story, but that'd be a quiet 4 days. You'd be waiting, 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 4 days. What about if it's 4 weeks? And you knew the story, or 4 years, or 40 years. You see, you know the story. You know the story. We know the end. We know the story. Paul says, "I would not have you be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who are asleep, that you sorrow not, even as others who have no hope." The Bible is not naive. It doesn't say there isn't pain and sorrow and sadness, but it says what there is not in the life of a believer is hopelessness. That we weep, God's given us tear ducts, the only way we can relate to death is such a foreign thing. There's a brokenness attached to it, but it isn't a hopeless brokenness, not a hopeless sorrow. It's a selfish sorrow. We're waiting. We know the story. It's written out. We know what's going to happen. They're going to be raised. Jesus said, "Don't be surprised the day's coming when all that are in their graves are going to hear the voice of the Son of Man and come forth." It's going to happen. He writes the story not for them, for us. He puts it in front of us for that reason, for our faith, so that we might have hope. Yes, he's the one. He calls them back, whether they've been gone a day, whether they've been gone an hour, whether they've been gone 4 days. He calls them back. He calls them out, and they come. Whether they're rotten, physically rotted away, he calls them. Job says, "I know that my Redeemer lives in the latter day. He shall stand upon the earth, and I'm going to see him with my own eyes. Nobody's going to see him for me. My eyes are going to see him. I'm going to behold him, even after my body's destroyed by worms. I'm going to see him for myself. Oh, that my words were written in a book. Oh, that they were carved on a rock with a chisel." Little did he know, huh? We're thankful. We know the end of the story. Where will you be? Are you certain of life beyond this world? You see how quickly and how temporary life can be. How quickly you can pass away. You see a 9-year-old with a gun in a school. Send your kids to school in the morning, they don't come home, a table falls over. Terrorism and war is not the exception anymore, it's the norm. The world, John says, is passing away. That we shouldn't love the world, it's already in the process of passing away. Jesus, Jehovah enlightens. Resurrection. Life. Calling people from the grave. We die today. Our spirit goes to be with the Lord. Paul says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. The physical frame waits for the resurrection. That's what we believe in. We don't just believe in life after death. There's a lot of strange people around who believe in life after death. We believe in resurrection. We believe in life after life. We believe that these physical frames are going to be raised. And when you see the people you love in heaven, you're going to be able to do this. It says they went to Jesus and took hold of him. He said, "Let me go. I haven't ascended to the Father yet." He said, "Feel me. Doth the Spirit have flesh and bone?" They embraced him. That's what we're longing for. That's what we're looking forward to. That's what's ahead of us. Do you have that hope? You know, it's interesting. Martin Luther, when his 14-year-old daughter, Magdalena, ready to turn 14 years old, contracted the plague. And he was crushed. And he prayed by her bedside and watched her deteriorate. And his prayer became, Lord, take her out of her pain. Take her. And he was there when she passed into eternity. It's said that when the carpenter came and put her in the casket and he was nailing the lid on the casket, you could hear Martin Luther screaming from his house, hammer away, because she's going to be raised at doomsday. Hammer away. She's getting up again. Just sleeping. I'm going to have the musicians come.